This is Small Business Conversations with Akona Machoba, unlocking essential advice, opinions, and key issues that affect South Africa's small business community.
Welcome to another edition of the Small Business Conversations podcast, Manweb's weekly SME show highlighting critical issues affecting South Africa's small business environment. This week, we are joined by young entrepreneur Smu Napai. He is the managing director of Shepherd's Feedlot, an emerging meat producer outside of Pretoria. Napai, along with his partner Calvin Kumalo, recently won first prize at the Red Hub Business Plan Pitch Competition, an initiative by the Regent Business School. The pair managed to convince panelists that their business idea of taking halal meat to the underserved yet buzzing township economy was better than the rest. Welcome, Smu, and thank you for making time to speak to us on the pod.
Hi, thank you, Akona, and hello, your listeners as well.
Firstly, congrats on coming up top at the competition. Tell us, what did you win? And let us in on that award-winning pitch that you made.
Okay, so I was studying a higher certificate in entrepreneurship last year with Regent Business School. And the program, one of the means to graduation, or it was just a business pitch, basically, part of the program, that towards the end of it, that we were supposed to use to display that what we learned, we could actually put it into use and convince the panel of investors that we could produce a business idea that they could actually believe in and buy into. So I came up with the idea after, first I was selling perfume, but then I came up with this idea after speaking with one of the teachers and asking her if actually supplying food to local communities wouldn't be a more feasible way to impact the community as well as make profits in a sustainable way.
And just run us through briefly on the winning pitch. What was your elevator pitch to the investors, and how did you manage to convince them that Shepherd Feedlot is the right business to back?
I think what led to me winning was when I was explaining to them the fact that what we do at Shepherd's Feedlot is we mix the best in business government practices and structures that we learned at Regent, as well as some that we get from our mentors, into the agricultural space, in particular livestock management, whereby we have another partner in the company who's a lady, actually, Salma, and she comes in with the veterinary science aspect of keeping care of the entire herd and everything. So the mixture and the multidisciplinary team that we have, I think, is what convinced them that we have actually not just an idea that can make it, but a sustainable way to push for longevity in the future.
And what was the prize? You didn't tell us what the prize you won was.
The prize was a 30K business injection to help start the business.
And I understand that the business focuses on providing halal meats to underserved economies like the township economy. Can you explain why focus on halal products?
The reason that we chose to focus on halal products is because the halal product is actually one which is holistically more sound for the human to consume, since it's guaranteed that you're getting meat from an animal that was healthy, that lived well, and that died well, which includes the humane slaughter to ensure that the blood that comes from the animal once slaughtered is all drained out. The animal doesn't have any diseases or any preconditions before death, and it's not an animal that perhaps died before being slaughtered, and then we just sell it just to get rid of the meat. But it's actually meat that is processed for consumption from basically weaning until the slaughter process is completed.
And why target the township economy?
The reason we targeted the township economy is because through our market research, what we discovered is that a lot of places that sell meat, a lot of people that sell like cooked food at taxi ranks or in just your local house in the community, actually have an interest in selling halal meat. Once, of course, we tell them what halal meat actually is, like I just did, they have an interest in having a quality product. And the interest also comes in when you look at the fact that a lot of the times their current suppliers can't meet the demand that's there currently, where they're selling with pap or just the meat itself. So what we do is that we come in to supplement that supply so that they can at least push until the end of the day, if not the middle of the day, during the lunch rush, where they could end up increasing their profits while we make a good revenue stream through that interaction with the business-to-business marketing that we've been doing.
And I understand that you are located just outside of Pretoria. And I just want to understand if you're serving just that area or you are broadening your reach into the Greater Gauteng province.
Well, definitely the plan is to broaden our reach throughout the Gauteng province, but because we're still starting, we want to provide a proof of concept and also build a reputation as well for producing consistent and quality meats. We want to create the demand in such a way that, not that we would want to not be able to meet the demand, but at some point we want the demand to reach a point where our supply is going to be constrained to the point where we need to now outsource further farms and bring more people into our team that can help us source more animals to actually provide for the greater region of Gauteng. But that's a challenge on its own because not all farmers necessarily deal in halal meat. Because halal meat, actually, if you look at it in terms of the definition, it's basically just grass-fed, free-range livestock grazing. So the only difference comes where the slaughter has to be, like, for example, done by a Muslim facing towards the Kaaba to certify it as halal. But like the living process of the animal also comes into play in terms of the organic agricultural processes.
And how will the winnings that you got through the competition assist you? You mentioned that you're still in the process of proving your concept. How will those winnings assist?
So the winnings, we put them into our business plan strategy in terms of assisting us with developing the infrastructure on the farm so that we can now take it to another level and ensure like the stock that is on the farm. Because another aspect of revenue generation that we have is renting out space for people to bring their livestock for us to take care of, which we will be able to securely do once the infrastructure is set up. And then we secure the livestock on the farm through an insurance package and scheme that will help to mitigate any losses or harms that might come to the stock on the farm.
You touched on a few things that we're going to touch on later on, but I just want to speak on the land issue. How did you go about securing the farmland that you're operating on right now? What is the ownership looking like? Do you own the land or is it communal land?
Okay, so the land that we operate on currently, it's family land and it's owned by my father.
And how big is that plot of land? And do you look to gate any more space or are you still satisfied with what you have now?
For the moment, we're satisfied, but of course, eventually we're going to need to expand for more land. There's communal land, unlike the area of Onverwacht where we're situated, but that is going to require engagement with the community cooperative, which is actually in control of that land. So, depending on how that engagement goes, we'll either use that communal land or expand further. Because what we have now, we're basically working around a 4 hectare segment of the land, but there's at least 30 to 35 hectares that's available on the land that we could use. But potentially, the plan is virtually to get our own farm elsewhere, so that we can operate in a more controlled setting where we don't have too many stakeholders butting heads about what should be done and whatsoever.
And I'm interested in the aspect of community land and how you go about securing that. What does that process look like? Who do you speak to get permission? And can you decide whatever you want to do once it's agreed upon? Or do you find that community members tend to want to have a say in the operations of that piece of land?
Well, the thing is, the land that we're talking about in Onverwacht, it already had like a community cooperative operating, if I'm not mistaken, from the early 2000s until maybe mid 2005, which the project eventually failed because, like I'm saying, there's too many butting heads. Everyone wants to be the main shot caller, which eventually causes problems because we can't all call the shot because we don't all have the expertise or the knowledge to do certain things. So that tends to lead to problems. But in terms of our engagement with the community, we would basically have to speak and engage with the main stakeholders of the cooperative who are still on its executive board and find out from them what type of rental arrangement or lease arrangement we can come towards so that we can get the property and potentially buy it from them in the future if they ever give us sight that that might be an option for us, or if they just want us to perhaps maybe just continue plowing back into the community via CSI incentives, giving maybe computers to the local primary school, or just developing the local clinic, or maybe donating a borehole for the community since they suffer with water shortages in the area, something of that nature. Yes, I think depending on the profits that we make, something that we can consider to do to keep the farm in Onverwag, because like I'm saying, it's family land on my part, so I'm sentimentally invested in uplifting and changing the community.
And in terms of the population on the farm, what kind of livestock, what range of livestock do you keep on the farm? And are they all up for sale eventually or what?
Okay, so the livestock on the farm is the livestock that I use predominantly for breeding. So it's not all for sale at the moment. Like I was telling you, I'm going to be using the winnings to fix the infrastructure on the farm, as well as buy the stock that I will be using to sell the meats that we're going to be providing at Shepherd's Feedlot. So at the moment, the animals that we have are cattle, goats, and sheep, as well as some few chickens. And there are also a few pigs as well that some of my other business partners have on the farm. So all of these animals, like I'm saying to you, we basically have been breeding our own select types of breeds, although they're not like the registered types that you get when you are part or a member of particular organizations. But I've bred my cattle to basically become Borans. I've bred my sheep to become a hybrid between the Dorpa and the Dharma, which is like a meat producing sheep. And then I've bred my goats between a mixture of Kalahari Reds and Boer goats so far. So all of the different breeds of animals on the farm are meat-producing animals predominantly. And I will use the studs from those breeding herds as an initial kickstart into the Shepherd Feedlot meat production, as well as supplement those with some that I'll buy from elsewhere, but with the same breeding stock, so that we can maintain the quality of the animals that we sell out to the community.
I'm interested in just on that breeding topic. How do you decide which breeds to select? And also, are there any regulatory boards or regulations that you need to adhere to when you're doing that? Can you speak on the breeding process? Because you've mentioned so many breeds and how yours are different. But I'm interested in knowing what hurdles you might have to go through to actually get that permission to do that.
Okay, so to become certified as a breeder of the breed that I just told you about, I'd have to buy a stud from a registered member of those associations. For example, the Boran Association of South Africa, I'd have to buy a stud of one of those cattle, which it could cost anywhere between maybe 14,000 to 30K. So that's a pipeline ambition that we have as well. And then with the Meatmaster and the Dorpas, there's pretty wide access towards those ones because that's the sheep. The rams for those, they range anywhere between maybe 5,000 and maybe 15K as well, depending on the age and the size and whether it's certified or not, if it comes with a certificate. So to enter the breeding game in terms of the commercial sense, I would have to buy a stud that's certified with the organization from a certified breeder, which I am not at the moment. Like I'm saying to you, I, through my own research and just my personal love of animal husbandry, I would see a farmer in the community with a particular animal that I liked and would borrow his ram or his bull and would mix that into my herd. And at the moment, like I'm saying, I ended up with the type of animals that I personally, I love and enjoy the meat. And I can taste when I eat the meat that this is actually something that people would also like, because I've been asked many times why I'm not doing this on a larger scale, selling it to people. So as I said in the beginning of the interview, after going through the whole entrepreneurship training with Regent, I saw that this was an opportunity to take this farm into the commercial space, because I had been selling livestock informally, but never at the scale at which I want to do now. So with breeding, it's, I would say, a matter of two things. It's about gaining the trust of the breeders that are in the game by taking the effort of buying from them, getting yourself certified, registering with them, and then continuing the process with them via the mentorships and the trainings and the vaccination protocols and all of that, as well as just basically the passion and the love and seeking out the knowledge of what's best to do for a particular breed, how to produce it, and how to take care of it, because each breed basically and each subbreed has its own quirks and specifications for its own herd mentality and stuff.
Spoo, I want to just clarify something here. So you mentioned the breeding process and how you're not necessarily a certified breeder. Are you doing the scientific process here, or are you hiring certified breeders to breed these animals? And also, if are you selling off these breeds to the public? I know you do sell on individual one-on-one basis at this point. And follow that up, what are the health ramifications of selling these animals?
So, like I'm saying, when it comes to selling the breeds and whether and how scientific it is, the process, since I'm a farmer, even though I'm informal with little to no training, I just gain the knowledge that I have basically by reading and by watching YouTube videos from other farmers all over the world. I take what they say and I just try and put it into practice. So in terms of the breeding, I do it like most farmers do it, and most farmers have been doing it for the past 15,000 years, just by going with basically what you see, and then from there taking it and learning how to deal with the particular animal based on its individual characteristics. On the customer, I wouldn't say that there's any health ramifications, because like I was telling you earlier, what we pride ourselves in and how we differentiate ourselves at the Shepherd's Feedlot is that our animals, they just go through the normal vaccinations and deworming. We don't supplement them with any steroids or GMO or enhancers to spur their growth for the purpose of mass sales and mass production. So because we're not hurdled, I think, like people that were caught up in the Green Revolution via this idea that you have to ensure for mass production that the size of your animal and the weight of your animal and the look of your animal is a certain particular way by a particular time. We let them grow naturally. So there are no health ramifications on our part, because the only thing that we supplement our animals with is just vaccinations, like I'm saying, with the deworming dips and just the parasite controls that we take. But that doesn't affect the quality of the meat, since they are mostly grass-fed, and we supplement that with grains. But that's only usually during winter, because during the summer and spring seasons, they can pasture and feed and stay healthy off of that. So there are no adverse health ramifications for our customers. I haven't gotten anyone come back to me and say that they got a cow with particular type of disease or that caused them any uneasiness, because what you'll notice in today's agricultural space is that African farmers especially, we are at war, actually, because the multinational corporations that are trying to come in forcefully into the continent are actually trying to stop the indigenous systems of agriculture that have been used for the past 15,000 years and supplant them with the use of pesticide companies fronting like their seed and agricultural companies, whereas these people are basically just bioengineering and just swapping out things that they used to use in World War II to kill people. Today, now they want to use it to supplement the use of our food, which it's a strange thing if you consider and just reflect on how you could actually manage to do something so nefarious by claiming to feed people while actually harming them. So we try to stay away from that and just maintain on the organic shepherd's approach to animal husbandry. Hence why we are the Shepherd's Feedlot, because feedlotting in itself, it's also a very industrialized industry. But the difference with the Shepherd's Feedlot is that we feed our animals the natural way so that people can get the benefit of having natural foods again.
Thanks for that explanation, Spoo. And I'm glad that you speak on the challenges that are faced by the sector. I'm wondering, with all of these headwinds? I mean, you've mentioned now the entrance of international players and how they operate and function that is different to the model that you would like to adopt on with your business. And then there's also things like water shortages that you mentioned earlier that the area is facing. We know power cuts are a thing. We know weather patterns and the drastic change in those. Theft is also an issue, and the health of the animals, trying to preserve that, is also a concern. Can you speak to me on the key cost drivers that are currently challenging the livestock farming sector of agriculture right now, and how you are handling that as you try to firm up your roots in this industry?
Okay, so like the key cost drivers for us, I would say, would definitely be the issue of load shedding, first of all, because it affects our water supply. It affects the security at night for the animals. Hence why I was telling you about just the reorganizing our entire infrastructure in a way that we can have solar powered lights, so that even when the lights go off at night also, the lights remain on, and the people that are in charge of caring for the animals, if, for example, myself or my business partners aren't on the farm that particular evening, they can be there and have the wherewithal to see around the farm and see what's happening and check during their shifts what's going on. Another issue, you mentioned the challenge of water. And on Forvaag, like I was telling you, there's been a challenge of water supply in the pipes since, I think, towards the end of 2019 in August or September. There hasn't been running water. Like, the community is being basically supplemented by water tanks on a daily, I think 3 or 4 times a day. Tanks come and deliver water to like different sections of the community every day. And we are blessed enough to have a borehole. But like I was saying, my passion is to help the community. So I believe that at this point, the community either needs its own borehole or a well, at least, where they can get their own water and not be dependent on water coming from the municipality. Because at this point, I feel like the entire country actually just needs to start maybe delving into the idea of self-determination, in that we need to see how to survive without our government, since it doesn't seem to come to the party all the time or on time. Another issue that we have in terms of our personal costs on the farm is just managing the cost of paying people salaries, because month to month things are never the same on the farm, and sometimes challenges vary. Sometimes, because of outbreaks of particular diseases or shortages of vaccines, we need to supplement and make plans with either holistic means of medicating the animals through the indigenous approaches, which, might I add, are hard to come by, especially in our community, since it's mostly like a farm area where most of the farmers are white. So the indigenous systems aren't as accessible as we would like them to be, but we're still in the process of researching some of those to find out how we can supplement the shortages in vaccines that tend to take place every now and then. Like, for example, right now, the country is going through a shortage of a blue tongue vaccine for sheep. So we're in the process of trying to find a way to maneuver that. Another issue that we have is definitely theft. I feel like on our farm, theft is the most pertinent issue that we need to address, because we don't have a problem keeping the animals in their enclosures and keeping them disciplined enough to come home on time and whatnot. But the major issue is now people coming into the farm and taking our stock like thieves in the night, which it's happened on my farm before, which is why I mentioned to you the necessity of getting insurance, as well as arming the people on the farm to be able to defend against such incursions in the future, because that is like a major serious threat. Hence, I also mentioned to you the necessity for assisting to uplift members of the community and make them a part of this project, because at least if people have money in the bank at a particular time through wages or salaries that we provide them, then it might be able to mitigate the criminal impulses that they might have due to the lack of resources on their part. So there's many challenges, definitely, but we are up and ready to meet them. It's just a matter of now implementing the plan that we have and stepping forward with our best foot every day at this point.
Just to end off, Sbu, where to from here for Shepherd's Feedlot. And if someone is listening here and wants to support your vision, what should they do?
Someone wants to support our vision here at Shepherd's Feedlot, I would suggest that they contact us firstly and get in touch with how they would want to support, because like I'm saying, we are very community orientated at the Shepherd's Feedlot, and our aim is to be the part of the community that assists it in developing from, it's a semi-rural area, but at the end of the day, even rural areas deserve running water, flushing toilets, paved roads, you know, because we're living in 2023 after all. So we encourage big business to come on board with us to share the vision of establishing a permanent, indigenized, centralized form of the African way of agriculture, which it doesn't seek to like just kill off any pesticides on the farm, but rather immunize the animals towards any parasites in the area, but not kill off all the parasites or all the microbes and all the different aspects of the ecosystem, because each one has a part to play at the end of the day. So we want to create like a holistic and agroecology is what they call it, the vision that we have, in which everything that we do on the farm is basically sustained through the rotation of pastures, the care given to the animals in such a way that they benefit, the land benefits, and we don't try to harm, whether it's the person working or the animal which is being cared for. We try to bring out the best in everyone involved in the Shepherd Feedlot's activities in such a way as to produce the best quality product, keep the customer happy and healthy, and obviously keep the revenue flowing.
And that is Smu Napai, agricultural entrepreneur and the managing director of Shepherd's Feedlot, which recently won first prize at the Regent Business School Red Hub Business Plan Pitch Competition. Thank you once again for your insights, Smu.
No problem. Thanks for the opportunity and the platform. Take care to you and your listeners.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please like and follow Small Business Conversations, and don't forget to share our episodes. If you want to contribute to the conversation, you can tweet me at machoba_a, or you can email us at smepodcast@manweb.co.za to share your thoughts and suggestions for future conversations. Until next time, thank you and goodbye.
You've been listening to Small Business Conversations with Akona Machoba. To listen to more MoneyWeb podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, or your favorite podcast platforms. MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.